Thank you, thank you, thank you. Joseph, thank you for leading us in those great songs. I mean, that's a song that I like to come up here. Man, I can preach for hours. They might not want you to lead that song anymore. But now, that's a very exciting song. It's very exciting for me to be able to be back up here with you guys. I appreciate Jason plugging our series of family dynamics that's going on and talking about Dr. Stephen Wages coming in next Sunday. Dr. Wages, you're going to love him. He's just a guy that's easy to love, just down to earth, does a great job, got a lot of just intelligence and common sense when it comes to taking care of families and preventing things from happening in families. And so he's going to do a great job. And I appreciate Jason and Justin and the great jobs they have done in this dynamic series on the family. And so I pray today that as we talk about some mistakes that we have to avoid, there's probably hundreds of them, right? But I've narrowed it down to five today, and so we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But before we get into that, let me make mention to you, something that can help our families out is Lazda Leaders Leaderettes. And so that's going to be kicking off in the next couple weeks. So keep your eyes out, ears open for that. Appreciate those who are going to be working hard in that ministry. And so please, there's going to be a kickoff. Be aware of that in a week or so. Also, I have some exciting news to announce to you today. There's somebody in our number that is expecting. It's always a great time for me. Because someone once said that as long as you're having babies in your church, you're growing. And I agree with that. So I'm very excited to announce today, and this one's very special in my life because it's in my family, not Michelle and I, but Hannah and Clay McHugh. So Hannah and Clay, we're very excited for y'all. Hannah, you can relax now. So Clay is our home run hitter on our softball team, and so we're thankful that you've knocked it out of the park here as well. So Toby and Angie, grandparents to be, so excited about that, and great grandparents and great uncles and all the above. So love you guys. Please be praying for them and congratulate them as well. Is there a difference between a family in which everyone is a Christian and a Christian family? Is there a difference between a family in which everyone in the family have been baptized and a Christian family? I would say to you, yes, there is a big difference. There is a difference in saying I'm a Christian and doing something to prove I'm a Christian. You remember God? He made His love known to us. He manifested His love to us. You know what that means? He showed it. He not only said, I love you, but He showed it through Jesus Christ, His Son. And so, just being a Christian alone is not enough. We've got to show things. And so, being a, hey, I'm a happy Christian family, doesn't necessarily mean I am a happy, functioning Christian family. It takes more than every family member being a born-again Christian to make a Christian family. I think it's very important to note. A Christian family. What is a Christian family? It's a family where relationships with each other are patterned after the way God communicates and relates to His children. If I want my family to be a Christian family, then I need to make sure I'm doing it the way God does it with us. It's a place, a Christian family is a place where truth is lived out, not merely talked about. In a highly functioning family, the parents provide a model of what it means to be made in God's image. Think about that, moms and dads. Those of us who have families, those of us who have children still at home, those of us who have children on the way, mom and dad in a Christian family is going to give us the pattern or the model of what it means to be made in God's image. Also, it's going to teach us where what it means to be a man or a woman. Think about that. Is that important today? You think about society and you think about what you're hearing on TV and what you're having to to try to go ahead and decipher so that is it time for me to talk about my children of what a man is and what a woman is? Who needs to be teaching that? Well, mom and dad need to be teaching that. It also teaches us in a strong Christian family how to relate intimately to another person. Hey, macho man out there, macho men, it's okay to be intimate with one another. We need to understand it's okay to be extremely close. It's okay to tell your feelings. It doesn't just need to be something that women do. We as men need to be able to do that and teach our children that as well. It also is important for us to show our children and families how to form strong, lasting commitments. I saw a real sad scene Thursday night. I'm the chaplain with the fire department here in Sims. And usually when they call you, it's never a good thing because it just means that I need to go and try to help comfort a family. They called me to a late Thursday night. I got called out here and I went and saw a family. Man been married almost 60 years to his wife. She passed away. Very sad scene. Man, I didn't know the man, didn't know the woman, but they're the Ramos family, so please be praying for them. But that man was so broken. His wife was still in the room. She had a cover over her. He went and he laid beside her and just loved all over her. That's a lasting, committed relationship. They've seen a lot. Man, a Vietnam veteran, just like many here, and there's a lot of things that happen. But that commitment needs to be told. That commitment needs to be shown. We also, in a Christian family, a strong Christian family, need to acknowledge and express emotions. That's important. We need to have constructive conflict. Anybody that tells you, hey, you shouldn't fight, then that's just wrong. You shouldn't just fight and do it in an ugly way. It needs to be constructive, and that conflict needs to be able to be worked out. It's going to happen. I told you, if I live with myself long enough, if I'm around myself long enough, I'm going to disagree with my own self and get on my own nerves. And so I know I'm going to get on Michelle's and my kids. And so it's important to have that really, really constructive conflict. Also, it's important to have physical, emotional, and intellectual boundaries. We need to know where our boundaries lie. We need to know how to communicate, how to cope and survive life's problems. We need to know how to be self-disciplined, how to appreciate oneself, and how to love others. A highly functioning family provides an atmosphere of support, encouragement, and positive opportunities for growth. And that's real important to know today. So this includes helping each person to come to a knowledge, an understanding, and acceptance of God and of Jesus Christ. If we fail to teach our children that, we have failed them. If we fail to teach our children about God and about Jesus Christ and His church, we have failed them. And that's real important for us today. It's a family. What is a strong, Christian, highly functioning family? It's a family in which biblical truth is both taught and obeyed. So today, I want to go through just some families with you, if you will. This is biblical examples. In Acts 10, I'm not going to be here long. Acts 10, Cornelius and his household. When Cornelius was taught, it wasn't just him. He went back and they shared the faith with his whole family and they obeyed the Lord. In Acts 16, Lydia and her household obeyed the gospel. In Acts 16, the Philippian jailer, after he went home, it was not just him, but it was his whole family that became Christians. In Acts 18, Crispus and his household. You see the scene here. 1 Corinthians 1, this is what Paul says about that. He wrote he had baptized the household of Stephanas. It's obvious that the best marriage that can happen in a family is first being married to Jesus Christ. So, I hope and pray today we're all married to Jesus Christ. And listen, again, I'm not just saying we are baptized and we're calling ourselves a Christian family. I mean married and faithful. Okay? It's one thing to be married and then be unfaithful to your spouse. It's one thing to be married and say, I love you, and then run around and do unfaithful things to them. That's the same with our marriage to Jesus Christ. If we are married to Him, then we need to not only be faithful to Him, we need to represent Him and be proud to be married to Jesus Christ. So if I've got my whole family on the ark and I've got my whole family living the right life, then I'm just going to tell you today, keep up the good work. But chances are there are some here today that are making mistakes with their families. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I don't make mistakes with my families, folks. I make mistakes all the time. But these are some that I've narrowed down that I think through studies and through research can prove to us that if we make these mistakes and we have these mindsets, then we're going to have some dysfunction in our family. And here is number one. We need to remind ourselves we aren't raising kids. We're raising adults. And I think that's real important for us to remember. You know, if you go to a goat farmer, I don't know any of those, but I'm sure that you might somewhere along the way. You could find one. Okay? If you went to a goat farmer and you said, "Hey man, I want to buy one of your full-grown kids." That's not what they say. They're raising goats. So I know it's easy to say. I heard this and it stuck with me. "Hey, I'm trying to raise my kids up." No, you're not. You're trying to raise adults up. But if we keep that mindset, if we're trying to think in our lives, "I'm raising kids," and that's our mentality, and that's our focus and everything else, then folks, we're going to make some grave mistakes with our children. And let me try to prove it to you. Here are five surefire ways, the way Terry says it, these are surefire ways to make sure we do not prepare our children for adulthood. You ready for them? Number one, fix all your kids' problems. You want to keep raising kids? You want your kids, as they're adults, to still be kids? Then fix every problem they have. It's happening, folks. I'm involved in education one way or the other. Okay, I've been a teacher, and I'm now a board member, and I see it, and I hear it, and everything else. Kids' parents are not letting them resolve their own problems. Now listen, there are some things mom and dad have to get involved in. But when little Johnny gets mad at little Billy, let little Johnny and little Billy, we've got to keep that mind. Now we teach them the right way to do it, but this is important. Number two, protect them if you want to make sure you do not raise and prepare your children for adulthood. Protect them from experiencing any kind of physical or emotional pain. You're not going to keep them in a bubble. As hard as it is for me, again, it's hard for me. I've got a sixth grader now who's going into middle school. I remember, now I did not go to Mobile Christian in middle school, but I can remember middle school. I can remember. I did not enjoy it. I did not enjoy the things that happened to me. Was I bullied? You better believe it. But you know what? Bullying wasn't a thing. It was just, "Hey, just toughen up and get over it," or, you know, "fight," or whatever. And I'm not saying do that. Okay? But the point I'm trying to tell you is, it's still there. And to send my kid that I'm raising to be an adult out, okay? And say, that's hard. He's going to feel pain. My little girl, my precious little girl. You know, when I hear that some person has broken her heart, yeah, it gets the dander up in a dad, but you know what? That's good for her. As hard as I have to admit that. Number three, give in to their excuses about not working. "My dad's not able to be here today, but my brothers are. Mama's here. Was there any excuse for us?" Uh-uh. Daddy did not say at 7 o'clock on Saturday morning, "Hey, Terry, hey, buddy, would you mind getting up and helping me this morning?" Now, you better get your tail up, and you better be outside. He could whistle, and it would wake you up. You just knew we had to do it. There was no, "Oh, Daddy, I don't feel like it." Yeah, okay. But that's happening today. That generation's not here anymore, it seems. "Oh, Daddy, I don't feel like cutting the grass." "Okay, buddy, it is hot outside." No, get your tail outside and cut the grass. I mean, these are things we're trying to raise them now. Make sure you do for them whatever, I got to hurry. Make sure you do for them whatever they can not do for themselves. You tired of picking up after them? Guess what? There's a solution. You can make them do it. And finally, if you want to make sure your children are not prepared for adulthood, give them only what will make them happy. Those are five surefire ways to not prepare your children for adulthood. In today's day and time, I'm not saying here. I'm not saying here at Azalea City, but maybe here. But especially in other parts of society, or even parts of churches, it's almost a shock to me that somebody hasn't come forward and said, hey, I want to be baptized for my kid. I know that seems funny, but that's kind of where we are. That's the reality of where we are. Responsibility is an interesting word. In fact, it's two words if you think about it. It's response and ability. Okay? Response and ability. God expects us to teach responsibility to our family, to our children. Proverbs 22 verse 6, train up a child in the way he should go. When he is old, he will not depart from it. And sometime when they leave the home, they have to take responsibility for their soul. They have to take responsibility for their life. My mom and dad do not pay my bills. It'd be nice, but they're not in a situation they can do that. I have to pay my own. Michelle's parents do not pay our bills. It'd be nice, but we're not in that reality. We have to do it on our own. And so will your children, and so will my children. What can we do for our children when it comes to responsibility? The first thing we can do is lead. We can lead them. Lead so their response reveals their ability. Lead so their response matches their ability. Lead so their response grows their ability. Our families need to grow in God. Our church family needs us to grow in God. Our future families need us to grow. Let's approach this in knowing we are raising our children to have their own faith, to have their own walk, to be responsible for their salvation. If we do that, we have not failed them. We have not made mistakes. And we can rest easy at night. Number two, if we want to make sure we make mistakes with our children, we need to never show, or our families, not just children, never show appreciation. Here's the appreciation, right? Thumbs up, you did a great job. But here's what we're trying to teach today. If we want to make mistakes, we're not going to show that. We're not going to tell them. We're not going to be happy. We're not going to show this affection to one another. This is really important. Appreciation can be extended on a purely intellectual level. It can be done without any emotion, without genuine feeling. You can say, I mean, you hear it all the time. Somebody might say, hey, thank you for that. And they didn't really mean it. Thanks. You know, they didn't really mean it. So it can be said, appreciation can be shown, but there be no feeling or emotion attached to it. It can be something we say or something we do in honor of another person because we see an advantage in doing it. I'm going to say thank you because they're going to keep doing it for me. Affection, however, when we put affection in it, it's more than just words. It is clearly an emotional response. An empty good job, hey, good job. An empty good job or an empty pat on the back doesn't carry much weight. But when you add the emotional component of affection, expressed appreciation becomes very powerful. It's like gasoline for a car. You show some, hey man, I am so proud of you. You did a great job. Hey honey, I appreciate you so much. Or however, you really put some emotion and affection in it. That will help a person go that extra mile. It will help a person be able to get to the next town. We're told we have to be thankful people. It's God's will for us to be thankful. In fact, 1 Thessalonians 5:18, in everything give thanks. Listen to this. For this is the will of God in Christ Jesus. You know what the will of God for your life and my life is? To be thankful people. You know the Bible. You know the stories, right? There are too many that are expectful people. Let's just say this. Let's say, somebody does something for you over and over again. Let's say we got one of our teenagers. I'm just going to throw out a number here, 16 years old. Okay, let's say for 16 years, mom and dad has cooked meals provided for them or washed clothes for them, okay? And that happened in my family, you know? So after something happens so many times, I use 21 because 21 becomes a habit, but after something happens for 16 years, guess what? We don't thank anymore. We don't say thank you anymore. We might say it, but it may just be words. We expect it. And if we're not careful, this attitude carries over in our families and it carries over into the church and it carries over into the world. And we expect people to wait on us hand and foot. Instead of saying thank you, we're like, we expected you to do that. That's the way we live. 10 lepers were healed in Luke 17. One came back being a Samaritan. He fell down at the feet of Jesus. He hugged him. He loved him. He worshiped him. He praised him. Jesus said, go and your faith has made you well. But he said, but weren't there 10? Where are the other 9? 90% of the people failed to go back and thank Jesus Christ. Jesus aptly defined the depths of affection when he said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. Surely a person that loves like that will love with his arms, giving hugs, will love with vocal cords, expressing appreciation. Let's make sure we're doing what we need to do to appreciate one another in our families. Number 3. We want to make a mistake. We want to make sure that we don't send our families out to change the world for God. Then we need to have this mindset. Never touch. Don't touch! Listen, I get it. Trust me, I get it. You know, my children are getting to where they do not like me to use them. I mean, I understand that. It's kind of embarrassing. So I'm just going to say that there were some kids at my house yesterday. One older boy, one younger girl, okay? And they came to me and were like, one of them, the oldest, said about the youngest, can you please get on to blank? Because they are annoying me. I said, what are they doing? This person will not get away from me, will not quit touching me. I get it. Okay, I get it. Don't touch! You know, I was annoying little brother too. But I want you to understand this. We need to be touched. It's vital. In a culture where we can pull money from a machine and never interact with a human bank teller, we can buy our groceries and never even talk to a cashier, walk on a crowded sidewalk, and never meet anyone's eye, call up for technical help or customer service, only to get information from a computerized voice. Folks, I'm telling you, it's possible to be alone in a very busy world. But I'm here to tell you, without touch and without embrace in the family, it is possible to be alone in a family. It is. We need to touch one another. We need to hug one another. We need to embrace one another, and we need to do it quite often. Why is touching in the family so important? In Luke 15, I want you to think about that young man. He had messed up big time. He had been selfish. He had wasted all of his inheritance. He had now gone and just, he was starving. He was miserable. He knew he needed to make things right. He worked out this speech to go home. And the first thing the father did was embrace him. You think touch is not important? In fact, it says in Luke 15, verse 20, he arose and came to his father, but when he was still a great way off, his father saw him, had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. He'd been gone. He'd been lost. He loved him with agape, unconditional love. And when he saw that his lost son, his dead son, had come back home, is now alive, he ran and the first thing he did was hug him and kiss him. It's very important. Jesus in Matthew 8, 1 through 4, there's a leper who needed to be touched. Jesus could have healed any way he wanted to. He made cool ways to be healed. He put mud in a guy's eyes. We talked about that. Jesus could have wiggled his ears, whatever, and healed this guy, but he touched him. Why? Because he needed to be touched. Touching is a language that sends a message of safety, warmth, and love. Wouldn't the world be a better place if families ran home for a hug? Wouldn't marriages be happier if the spouse was waiting with a hug when the other spouse got home? We need to be touched. We need to be embraced. We need hugs. If you want to be a family that makes mistakes, and I know nobody does, the worst thing we can do is have a don't touch me policy. Number four. Again, five signs of dysfunction in a family, five mistakes that we can make. Number four is this. Just teach it. Hey, just do it your way. Do it your way. That's Burger King's logo. I saw that one that said the church, have it your way. Jeremiah 35, verses 1 through 5, reads like this. It's a very interesting passage of Scripture, one you may not be that familiar with. The word which came to Jeremiah from the Lord in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, saying, go to the house, that's literally the family is what it means there, that's the Hebrew word, of the Rechabites, and speak to them, and bring them into the house of the Lord, into one of the chambers, and give them wine to drink. Then I took Jaazaniah, the son of Jeremiah, the son of Habazaniah, his brothers and all his sons, and the whole house of the Rechabites. And I brought them into the house of the Lord, into the chamber of the sons of Hanan, the son of Igdaliah, a man of God, which was by the chamber of the princes, above the chamber of Maaseiah, the son of Shallum, the keeper of the door. Verse 5 now. Then I set before the sons of the house of the Rechabites bowls full of wine and cups. And I said to them, drink wine. Now I want you to notice verses 6 through 11. But they said, we will drink no wine. For Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, commanded us, saying, you shall drink no wine, you nor your sons forever. You shall not build a house, sow seed, plant a vineyard, nor have any of these. But all your days you shall dwell in tents, that you may live many days in the land where you are sojourners. Thus we have obeyed the voice of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, in all that he charged us. To drink no wine all our days, we, our wives, our sons, or our daughters, nor to build ourselves houses to dwell in, nor do we have vineyard, field, or seed. But we have dwelt in tents and have obeyed and done according to all that Jonadab, our father, commanded us. But it came to pass when Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, come up into the land that we said, come, let us go to Jerusalem for fear of the army of the Chaldeans and for fear of the army of the Syrians. So we dwell at Jerusalem. Now I want you to notice all this happens all the concept of what was against their conscience, and by the way, you can throw anything into that for our point today, okay? What is against your conscience? What should, you know, somebody say, hey, you can do this, you can do that. No, I've been taught this way. It's not about me. Listen to verses 18 and 19. Jeremiah said to the house of the Rechabites, thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, because you have obeyed the commandment of Jonadab, your father, and kept all the precepts and done according to all that he commanded you. Therefore, thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Jonadab, the son of Rechab, shall not lack a man to stand before me forever. Now, why did the Rechabites do that? Because it wasn't about them. You see, society says, do it your way. And if we're not careful as families, we can have that mentality. No matter if we call ourselves a Christian family or not, we can be like, no, it's about me. It's about my family. It's not about the others. It's not about anybody else. It's about mine. And so I'm going to do it my way. We're going to do it our way. But folks, we've got to do it God's way. You see, when we do it God's way, like the Rechabites did, then we're telling God we're surrendering to the Lord. The Rechabites surrendered to the Lord. They surrendered to their family. They surrendered to God's way, not theirs. We can't have it our way. It's got to be God's way. Let's be sacrificial families. And then finally, this morning, if you want to make a mistake that will devastate your family and God's forever family, teach that worship is not important. I can't emphasize this enough. In Psalm 24, 3 through 6, who shall ascend the hill of the Lord? And who shall stand in the holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart. Who does not lift up his soul to what is false and does not swear deceitfully. He will receive blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation. Such is the generation of those who seek him and who seek the face of the God of Jacob. Hebrews 10 gives us the pattern. Why are we here today? Bubba led us in prayer, talking about, he led it in Sunday school as well. He appreciated both of his prayers. But he talked about that we are here and God is the audience. You see, we didn't come here today for us, even though we're going to get something great out of it, right? We came here for God. We came here to sing these praises. We came here to gather around and commune with Him. We came here to pray. We came here to challenge ourselves. And that's what I'm hoping we're doing right now. But folks, let me remind you, this is God's pattern. We come here to draw near to Him. This is the Hebrew pattern. Hebrews 10, we're not only drawing near, we're building up the strength of our grip on the confession of our faith. We're holding fast. And then finally, we're here to stir up love and good works. When we do those three things, we get something greatly out of it, and so do our families. But guess what? When we do not come here, or we do not worship, we do not draw near, we do not hold fast, we do not stir up love and good works, we take in more filth. We take in more garbage. We take in more world. And the more we take in, the easier it gets to slip away. Luke chapter 2, verse 41. Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. Why did they do that? That's the way they worshipped in the Old Testament. Under the Old Law, I should say. That's the way they worshipped. And it was important for them to keep the religious feast, and so they did. And they taught Jesus, even though he was the Son of God, his earthly parents taught him the importance of worship. If we want to not make mistakes with our families, then we've got to be in the regular practice of worshiping. And folks, I'm going to say that we also need to be involved. Not just be here, but be involved if we want our families to function at the highest level possible. So that means there's some hard things that I've got to say. We can't teach our children that ball games are more important than God. I mean, what are we teaching them? Hey, I love athletics as much as the next person. But what am I teaching my child? Or we could say any extracurricular activity, okay? My little girl's in dance. But we make it very clear that she's not going to miss worship for that. Okay? We've got to make sure that these things matter. By the way, I believe in teaching our children to make good grades. When I was a youth minister, and listen, it aggravated me then, and honestly, it still aggravates me now. We can't. I wish teachers didn't give homework, and they appreciate, but we can't skip Wednesday nights and such just to do our homework. You know, some preacher said it a long time ago. I'd rather my children be in heaven learning their ABCs than in hell speaking Greek and Latin. It's pretty strong. We can't teach our family that the love of money is more important than God. Listen, I understand we have to work on Sundays. I understand that. But I'm saying when I choose and I make a choice that I'm going to chase the money more than be the example, that's bad. We can't let Sunday just be a catch-up day, man. Listen, I said it in class this morning, is I don't care if you're retired. Every person, every family in this room is busy. Everybody in today's 2018 is busy. I said this in class this morning. If we took our stress levels and put it in the 1930s, everybody would be clinically hurt with the levels of stress that we experience today. Everybody. And that was through the Great Depression. We're all busy. But Sunday we just got some things we got to catch up on, so we're not going to worship today. It's a mistake. It's a grave mistake. Sunday fun day. Sunday can be fun. My children love to worship. I love to worship. This is fun to me. Johnny said it in the back. He prayed in his prayer before we as men came out. He said, "Thank you, Lord, that we can be together and have fun with one another, enjoy one another." But this hashtag Sunday fun day, and I'm on the beach somewhere, or I'm whatever somewhere. And listen, I'm not saying that people aren't. I'm saying if I'm skipping God, then what am I teaching my family? It's not just worship. Now, this may just come from a preacher, okay, who likes people to fill up these empty spots. And we got a lot of people gone today, and there's vacation. And listen, we're always going to have that because we're a congregation that goes. And I love you, and I appreciate you. And please don't think if you told me I'm going to be gone next Sunday, I'm not preaching to you. But let me just say, we need you to be here at your local church as much as possible. Because why? Well, if I'm bouncing around all the time, then you know what I'm easier to do? I'm easier to slip off and not be as involved as I once was. Hey, my children need good friends. I pray about it every day. One day they're going to need a good boyfriend and girlfriend. One day. I'd like for them to come from the Azalea City Church of Christ. Parents need good friends. You know, my best friends in the world go to church with me, and I'm thankful for that. I really am. I don't know what I'd do without them. So I want to be around them. I want us to be here. You see, the church needs good families. Azalea City needs those. So we need to be here. We need to be worshiping. We need to be a part as much as we possibly can. So in conclusion today, let's review them real quick. I want to make mistakes, then let's just keep the mindset I'm going to keep raising my kids to be kids. Never show appreciation in the family. Never touch, never embrace, never be with one another. Just teach the mindset, hey, let's just do it your way. It's a grave mistake. And then finally, let's just show them and teach them that worship's not important at all. We want to do those five things, and there are others that I could list. But those are grave mistakes we can make with our families. So today I want to ask you, what if your family's not where you want it to be? What if your children are grown and out of the home? What if you had a failed marriage? Well, guess what? It's never too late at whatever stage of life you're in to create good habits. It's never too late to right wrongs. You see, it's time to reconcile where we can reconcile. It's time to step up where we can step up. Just like starting a new diet or a new exercise program or a new workout or a new job, there's never a better way to get started than just to get started. You know, when you start swimming and we've got a pool at our home and you know, when the weather's still cold outside and or cool outside and it's warming up and the water's still cold, my kids, you know, they'll like walk in. I'm like, not me. I just jump in because I can't handle that slow. It's time today. It's time to jump in. Our families matter. Our legacy matters. Our influence matters. Our spouses are depending on us. Our children are depending on us. So let's build our homes on good habits. After all, wouldn't it be great to know that when we left here, no matter what, no matter if we were gone and our children's legacy was living on, we could all make the comment, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Today, if you need to make things right, let's do it right now together. We stand and sing.